Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. Of course, that's Phil Collins' song from the iconic and steamy scene in the movie Risky Business. The film launched the career of a young man named Tom Cruise, and it represented a step in the evolution of a film genre. The teen movie, moving from a Leave It to Beaver sentimentality to the trials of youth in a smarter and often raunchier way than anything that came before it. A new book, The Ultimate History of the 80s Teen Movie, is a pop culture history guide of sorts. It charts this particular period in Hollywood with big-name executives rubbing shoulders with young up-and-comers who are now big mainstream stars and young directors who are now statesmen, and the idea that teenagers were actual humans. James King is a film critic and author of The Ultimate History of the 80s Teen Movie, and he joins me now. Hi, James.
Hi, I'm in London right now, and I've had quite a few technical difficulties, so I'm hoping that everything sounds relatively clear to you, Alison.
We are good. So what made teen movies different in the 80s than previously, the previous teen movies that had been out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because there were teen movies in the 70s. I'm sure people know and love American Graffiti and Animal House and things like that. But they were quite retro. They looked back to the 50s and to the 60s. Grease, of course, was another one. And we still had those in the 80s. But I think, generally speaking, there was more of a look at contemporary America, what was going on in the current world with computers and with music and with technology and, of course, with society generally, with politics as well. So I think that was the main move, the main switch. We had a load of new stars. And those new stars were making movies about 1980s America, not America from the past.
What was going on within the Hollywood movie-making ecosystem and the business part of it that made teen movies so popular?
Well, you had a lot of younger executives. And, of course, with younger executives who are maybe in their late 20s, their early 30s, they're going to think more about younger audiences. You also had younger filmmakers coming through, people who'd been to film school, maybe the first lot of people who'd been to film school, or in the case of John Hughes and many others, people who'd worked at National Lampoon. You had actors who had sort of come through Saturday Night Live, all these things that had emerged in the 70s. You had a whole group of new, young, hungry, creative people wanting to get their movies on the big screen. So, yes, it was the executives and the actors, a whole new crop of young actors, but also just people from other areas as well, a whole new style of music. We had new wave music and the synthesizer coming in, you know. So there was lots of new styles, lots of new pop culture events for young people to latch onto, and the movies had to reflect that.
Let's talk about a couple of the films. Fast Times at Ridgemont High in 1982 was Cameron Crowe's movie. And, you know, Cameron Crowe was in here last week, and he's gone on to become an Oscar-nominated director. What was it about that movie that was pivotal in these teen age movies?
I saw those photos of you and Cameron Crowe. I was so jealous to see you be hanging out with him. What was pivotal? Well, of course, he went undercover to write the book, to write the story in the late 70s, went undercover as a student. Luckily, even though he was in his 20s when he did it, he still has, in fact, I think he still has, quite a baby face and looks a lot younger than he actually is. So he went undercover to write that story, to actually get an authentic look at what was going on in high school. And this goes back to what I was saying about contemporary, people trying to deal with contemporary events in the 80s rather than historical events, you know, and Fast Times was very much, this is what is happening now in high school. And when he turned that into a movie, he also wanted to keep that authenticity. It was also important, of course, because you had some new stars come along, new stars that we remember very well, like Sean Penn, who gave an amazing performance in that film, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Judge Reinhold. There's, of course, a very famous scene, the bikini scene, the swimming pool scene that I'm sure a lot of people remember, apparently the most rewound scene in video history. So, you know, it had iconic moments, too. But there was a darkness, you know, it dealt with teenage pregnancy, it dealt with some tough subjects. So, yes, it was fun, it had a whole load of new stars in it, it was authentic, it was tough, it had everything, plus, of course, a great soundtrack.
My guest is James King. He's a film critic and author of The Ultimate History of the 80s Teen Movie. I did want to talk about The Outsiders, which was based on the popular S.E. Hinton novel. And when you look at the cast of The Outsiders, Matt Dillon, Tom Cruise, Patrick Swayze, Emilio Estevez, what was it about this movie that attracted this kind of talent that would turn out to be Oscar-nominated actors and highly bankable stars?
Yeah, that is... just to imagine that kind of lineup now is insane, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was directed by Francis Ford Coppola, and I think that was a huge attraction to the young stars because, of course, he was an Oscar winner himself for The Godfather, had won huge acclaim in the 70s, but had had problems in the early 80s. So he was really someone looking to make a bit of a comeback, looking to get back to his roots as a filmmaker and work with young people and make something low budget rather than huge and bloated like he had done with Apocalypse Now. So he was very much an attraction. And I write in the book, actually, about the audition process for that film, because the audition process just sounds crazy. And if that lineup, the guys who actually made the movie, is impressive, there are also people you'll have heard of who auditioned for it as well and who didn't make the movie. It just seemed like every young guy from Hollywood at that time was trying to get in that film. But Coppola, you know, he's an artist and wasn't just going to direct something like 100 other teen movies. He was going to direct something very different. And that's one of the joys of The Outsiders and Rumblefish, which was its companion piece, is that they're not like any other teen films. They are clearly teen films made by someone who is an artist, not just an everyday filmmaker.
Well, you mentioned music, and I think this song is probably one of the most iconic songs to deal with 80s teen movies. So, James, you can't talk about 80s movies without talking about John Hughes and 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club. How did he become such a figurehead of the teen movie genre?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. The music definitely played a part. And, of course, that was Simple Minds. He played there, a band from Scotland, but he introduced other UK bands into America, the Thompson Twins, for example, Psychedelic Furs. So he had a real his finger on the pulse when it came to the British music scene, which a lot of people in the States, you know, didn't know so well. So he was instrumental in introducing a lot of bands into the States. He was instrumental in giving female actors some leading roles, probably most famously Molly Ringwald, but also, you know, Some Kind of Wonderful has two female leading roles as well. You've got Ali Sheedy as well in The Breakfast Club. So he was making the Brat Pack, if you like, slightly less masculine, slightly less macho, and giving us some romantic and some touching and some emotional moments. So he was key in that. But I think also just his sensitivity as a writer. Now, not everything he did was sensitive, but when he was writing sensitive, moving, touching scenes that really resonated with adolescents, really resonated with teenagers, that's when he was at his best.
You bring up an interesting point, because when we look back at these movies, now that we are being thinking about Me Too and sexism and racism, how do we watch these films? I just want your point of view, these films with a critical eye while still acknowledging their importance.
Yeah, I think it's doing both of those things. You know, Molly Ringwald last year wrote a piece for The New Yorker where she was saying, look, I had problems with what was going on in some of those films, and I've shown those films to my kids, and, you know, I have to explain why it was like that, that it was 40 years ago and things were different then. And I think that was a real wake-up call to a lot of people. If Molly Ringwald is saying these things, the queen of 80s teen movies, then we really have to take notice. And certainly in 16 Candles, a much-loved film, there are some very questionable moments sexually. There are some questionable moments racially as well. There are some brilliant moments, but there are some awkward moments. And we have to flag those up. We have to accept those, be critical of them. But at the same time, look at the good things too. And all of his films, you know, there are great moments. There are groundbreaking moments. So I wouldn't want the bad things to overtake the good. I think we absolutely have to acknowledge them. But we can also still acknowledge that he did some amazing things for movies.
Do you see the influence of these movies in current teen movies as a contemporary film critic?
Yeah, I think so. And I think at the moment, actually, as I speak, there's kind of a new wave of teen films coming out. You see it every 10 or so years, the teen movie comes back. It certainly came back in the late 90s when we had things like She's All That and 10 Things I Hate About You and Cruel Intentions. At the moment, we've got Booksmart, which is the Olivia Wilde movie, which is great. There was a movie called Eighth Grade that came out a few months ago, which was great. Some documentaries as well, looking at teenage issues. So I think at the moment we're going through another phase of the teen film, and they're different each time. Of course, they deal with slightly different topics and do it in a different way. But there's always going to be echoes of the great teen films from the 80s. They are so powerful. And again, you played Simple Minds, like I mentioned. You know, that crops up. That crops up in Pitch Perfect. It's still an immediate thing. As soon as people hear that, they're immediately taken back to that era. It still has that power.
It is a very fun and informative read, the ultimate history of the 80s teen movie. James King, thanks for joining us.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you, Alison.
This is All of It on WNYC.